You know, one of the things that you've probably heard me say over and over again, if you've been at the Vineyard for any amount of time, is that the greatest measure of my walk with God is not what people think of me outside of my household, but what those who know me best, who know me intimately, what they think of me. See, it's easy when I'm just out and about to put on a persona or to appear a certain way. But when I speak to my household, not only my wife and my children, but also thinking of things like those who know me intimately, our church staff here, they're around me all the time. They see me under pressure, just like my wife and kids do. And one of the questions I'm always wondering as I'm talking to them, thinking about my relationship with Christ, is what do they think of me? Who do they think that I am? Am I consistent to them? Do I appear different to them in different situations? Do I seem consistent in the way that I approach them, the way I approach others, the way I approach my family? And so I'm always thinking about what does it mean, you know, for me as a Christian and being so much in the public eye? And yet, here's the thing, is that it's not just a pastor thing. It's a thing that is important for all of us, for us to be consistent in our walk with Christ, that people see who we are, and that, here's the deal, that whenever I'm evaluating myself to decide at how I'm growing in the Lord, whether or not my Christianity is authentic or not, that the people that I would ask are not just those who I meet outside, but that I would interact with my family and know what they think of my Christianity and take that deeply to heart because they're the ones who know me best. One of the things that's been challenging is, you know, in recent times, there's been a lot of articles written about young people leaving the church and the struggles of that. And one of the things that they've said consistently is the reason that kids, young adults give for leaving the church once they get out of home is that they just see such a wide gap between what they saw at home and what they heard at church and thought the inconsistency proved that it wasn't working, that there wasn't anything substance to Christianity. And so one of the things that has concerned me greatly is the issue of who are we when no one is looking? What do my wife, my kids, our church staff here say about me? What do does your spouse, your children, your family, extended family members say about you, those that you work with? And here in this last section of Colossians, the Apostle Paul continues his point of our need for self-examination with regard to making Christ supreme, not just in our words, but with our actions, our words, and our thoughts. Now, oftentimes, whenever we start talking about this whole thing of the supremacy of Christ, we're thinking in terms of the things that we say about who God is or our theological statements or something like that. But when throughout this text, the thing that Paul asks again and again is, what is the evidence that Jesus Christ is really supreme in your life? How can anyone see that? Not just that you give lip service about it or speak about it, not just that there's eye service when people are looking, but what is it that you truly believe and how do you know that it is what you truly believe? Now, in this particular place, he's going to talk about our household. And usually when people come to this chapter in Colossians and they start to read about this, they spend all of their energy talking about the ordering or the creation of the Christian household. But here's the thing is that this chapter has really actually very little to do with the ordering of the Christian household, as most of these relationships were already commonly understood in the Greco-Roman world. These relationships are things that are just matter of fact. What he's questioning as he brings up these relationships is how do we find authenticity of faith through the lens of our household? How do we ask those questions? How do we measure who we are when supposedly no one is looking? So with that in mind, let's go to Colossians chapter 3, beginning in verse 18. I'm going to read in the English Standard Version. Please follow along in whatever translation you have. The one on your lap, that one that you're already reading, that's always my favorite translation. Colossians chapter 3, verse 18. Let's read. Wives, submit to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them. Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. Bondservants, obey in everything those who are your earthly masters, not by way of eye service, as people pleasers, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ. For the wrongdoer will be paid back for the wrong he has done, and there is no partiality. Masters, treat your bondservants justly and fairly, knowing that you also have a master in heaven. Continue steadfastly in prayer, being watchful in it with thanksgiving. At the same time, pray also for us that God may open a door to us for the word to declare the mystery of Christ, on account of which I am in prison, that I may make it clear which is how I ought to speak. Walk in wisdom toward outsiders, making the best use of your time, and let your speech always be gracious, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how you ought to answer each person. Tychicus will tell you about all my activities. He is a beloved brother and faithful minister and fellow servant in the Lord. I've sent him to you for this very purpose, that you may know how we are and that he may encourage your hearts. And with him, Onesimus, our faithful and beloved brother, who is one of you. They will tell you everything that has taken place here. Aristarchus, my fellow prisoner, greets you. And Mark, the cousin of Barnabas, concerning whom you have received instruction, if he comes to you, welcome him. And Jesus, who is called Justice. These are the only men of the circumcision among my fellow workers for the kingdom of God, and they have been a comfort to me. Epaphras, who is one of you, a servant of Christ Jesus, greets you, always struggling on your behalf in his prayers, that you may stand mature and fully assured in all the will of God. For I bear him witness that he has worked hard for you and for those in Laodicea and Hierapolis. Luke, the beloved physician, greets you, as does Demas. Give my greetings to the brothers at Laodicea and to Nympha and the church that meets in her house. And when this letter has been read among you, have it read to the church of the Laodiceans, and see that you also read the letter from Laodicea. And say to Archippus, see that you fulfill the ministry that you have received in the Lord. I, Paul, write this greeting with my own hand. Remember my chains. Grace be with you. Blessed be the reading of God's holy word. So, well, as we begin in this series, you know, the focus has been, as I've mentioned, on the supremacy of Christ, that Jesus Christ is supreme. Jesus is all that they needed. He wanted that to be deeply ingrained in their understanding, that they would not pursue other things. All they needed in order to be saved was Jesus Christ. Then Paul emphasized that they could not become more saved or be more loved by God by becoming something else, not by becoming Jewish or through any other spiritual practices or anything else, that what they needed was Jesus Christ alone. And I pointed out that that is still true for us today. Then the Apostle Paul pointed out the great value of things like spiritual disciplines, that it's not that they earn anything. There's no earning in Christ, nor would it elevate them to some higher spiritual level or make them a different class of Christian, but that these spiritual disciplines simply pointed to the sufficiency of Christ, that they would teach these disciples to utterly depend on Christ and not depend on themselves. And if that didn't point them that way, that they were in fact doing it wrong. Again, likewise for us. The spiritual disciplines do not make us a better class of Christian. They don't make us more loved by God. They don't do any of those things. What they do is they help us to see that Christ is our all in all and to focus our attention on him. Then last week, Paul was focused on the evidence of making Christ supreme in our lives. And in particular, he was pointing to the evidence of kingdom living in the present world. Now, what we noted is that the evidence that Christ is supreme in our lives is that we begin living a kingdom-oriented life now, that we don't make excuses about how the whole world's going to hell in a handbasket or something like that, that here on the earth, in the middle of a sin-filled world, that we begin presently to live our lives engaged with the world around us, living dead to self but alive to Christ in the present world in a wholly different way than the world around us. Not that we disengage from the world, not that we hide from the world, but that we live in the midst of it and we do things differently. We do them in the Spirit of Christ, living as though the reign, the will, the desires of God were to be accomplished in our lives. Now, today, as we read through Paul, Paul did not leave the leave them with just that measure, but he spoke to them really specifically about evaluating their walk with Christ based on their home life. You see, when you know it's a fairly common thing for us to point out to one another what we need to do out in the public sector and when people's eyes are on you. But when the church body isn't evaluating you, when your guard is down, when you're alone by yourself, what he wants to know is what's happening in your household. And when he says household, he uses a particular word. I've mentioned this before in some other messages, but he uses the word oikos. And oikos is the word from which we get our word economy. It's the idea not just of mom, dad, and the kids, but it is all those that have dependent relationships on you. So in the case of the Greco-Roman household, you're not only talking about mom, dad, and the kids, but you might also be talking about a bondservant. In Roman times, about three-quarters of the people on the street were all slaves. Now, slavery was a different concept in that world than it is in the United States in our sense of it. And our sense of it has ties to things of racism and suppression of one class over another and different things like that. But in that case, we're talking about an economic arrangement. So many times when people didn't have money, the way they went into debt, bondage, it's still bondage, the way they went into debt was that they would borrow money from someone who was wealthy and then they would end up in servitude because the borrower is slave to the lender. It's still true. And so they would put themselves into this financial debt, and then that owner, that slave master, would have control over their lives. And so it was still a very oppressive type of relationship, but it was primarily one of economics. And so usually that's the way people got a job. They just actually put themselves into debt to someone. It was possible for them to leave that slavery most of the time, not always, but in most cases, once they had paid their debt, if they didn't go into any further debt, they could leave that relationship. Of course, then the question was whether or not they would have a job or any way to make a living, but it was an agreed upon type of relationship for the most part. Now, in this situation, that economic relationship also sometimes transferred into what we call the patron client relationship, patron client. You ever heard someone say, "Don't patronize me"? Well, oftentimes in that situation, because of the legal way in which the society was organized, you didn't necessarily inherit from your family. In fact, there was a good chance that dad, if he didn't like you, just didn't give you anything, and everything in the house belonged to dad. Mom belonged to dad, the kids belonged to dad, everything. The servants belonged to dad. He was the ruler, and you had no other rights. Dad was the ultimate authority, and the ways the law of the land was written, that whatever he did with his property was his to do with, including you. So then, when we have that kind of oikos relationship, a lot of times people would be, that somebody else would inherit the finances, and then you would be without any finances or a living or anything else. And so you would patronize yourself to someone so that you could make a living, so that you would exist, especially if you were from a fairly wealthy household and you were like, well, what do I do now? I mean, I can't get a job or something like that, you know. So what do I do? So you go to the person who inherited daddy's money. He is the son of. One of the ways I've explained this relationship to us in the church in the past is the idea that we are all sons of God and we are all the bride of Christ. Guys, yes, you're the bride of Christ. Women, yes, you're a son of God. And the idea is this, that son of is a designation. It's a legal standing in which when I become the son of, it means that I'm the one who inherits everything from the Father. And with that comes a new identity. I may not be related to the person in which I inherited and became the son of. But what happened was, yesterday I was Bob and today I'm Mike, son of. You just, everything changed. That also meant that all of your past crimes were forgiven, all of your debts, everything. Your life was fundamentally changed. Don't you want to be the son of God so that your sins are forgiven, that your life is changed, and that all of your past is completely forgotten? Isn't that an important relationship for you to have? And so in this kind of thing, sometimes when somebody would become the son of and they would inherit, the family members went, well, what do I do now? Dad's money is all with this guy. Hey, buddy. Yeah, you know, you have got the best. You are such a smart. You're so wise. I can see why dad said you should get the money. You're really smart. And they would patronize them in hopes that they would get money, that they would treat that person like an ATM. Maybe some things never really change. Anyhow, so here's the deal, that in terms of that relationship structure, husband, wife, kids, the bondservant, all that kind of stuff, he's not ordering that. That is an existing relationship there. But what Paul does is he comes to this whole thing that they would have understood, and he begins to ask them questions about what is the evidence that Christ is supreme in their life by asking them about their relationships, what's happening in the household in terms of those relationships that are important to one another, those familial relationships. Now, most of the time when we think of filial relationships, we think specifically of brothers. Let me give you this example. We have the city of Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. Philos is the Greek word for love, referring to a love that exists between brothers. It's the filial relationship. And there are other filial relationships that we exist in sometimes are specifically because that we are the blood brother or sister sibling of a person. But there is also filial relationships that we develop that are not really filial relationships, like when you think about being in the church and we call each other brother and sister in Christ and things like that. That's that idea of filial relationship, that we love one another because there is a bond that exists between us. Another word that we use for love is the word agape. It means a love that is not defined by any conditions. The mistake sometimes made is that when we say it's unconditional love and that we somehow elevate agape love over filial love, when that's really not the case. It just means that you love that person and you don't have a particular reason to have love for that person. They're not a family member. You're not erotically attracted to them or something like that. You're loving them in a way that is pure and holy. You just have those kinds of feelings and that without some stipulation or condition by which you love them. And so in this case, he's talking about these familial relationships, the way that they relate to one another, the way that they love one another. And he does something that is really incredible, even though it's really looked upon with kind of disdain today. You see, in our egalitarian society where everybody is supposed to be equal and things like that, when we hear wives submit to husbands and things like that, we immediately kind of just recoil, because in our minds we think subjection, like, you know, a beat dog or something like that. But actually the word that's being used for submission here is the same idea of how the Father and the Son and the Son and the Spirit and the Father relate to one another in a submissive relationship. No one being higher or lower than anyone else, but it is a relationship in which there is connectivity of belonging to one another, of caring for the other person, of respecting them. It's a really important relationship in the household, because when you don't have that kind of relationship in a household, you know it, don't you? No matter how many times someone says, "I love you," by the way they react to one another, you know whether or not they respect one another, whether they're in submission to one another. And so when Paul is stirring this pot and he's picking around in the family thing, and he says, most importantly to the fathers, because this would have been really radical in Paul's day, he says, husbands, love your wives. Now, look, today we do wedding vows where we tell guys that, you know, and it, like everything in weddings today is all about, do we love one another? Why did you want to marry that person? Because they complete me. They just love me. Okay? I'm not making fun of it. I'm just saying that's the kind of things we talk about today. That's the expectation level today. But understand, in this, it was not. It was primarily a political and a convenience type of relationship. And if there was love, that was great. But at the end of the day, women couldn't make a living, and they had to get married, and children and wives were the property of their husbands. So when he says to them, love your wives, treat them as though they were created in the image of God, as he speaks to them about, this is radical stuff. When he says to a father, hey, when you deal with that child, don't provoke them to anger, don't squash them, don't crush them emotionally, that you treat them in such a way that they know that they are made in the image of God. And then he goes on to go through these relationships, dealing with them and how that they treat one another without regard really to family lineage, but what's the evidence that you care for one another? You see, love and respect go hand in glove. Sometimes when we talk about love and we say things like about unconditional love, what we mean is that you're supposed to love people without any conditions or stipulations. Well, here's the thing, that when we're talking about the respect that goes hand in glove with love, we're talking about that when we say we love someone, that it's not based on how we feel in the moment or whether we think they deserve the respect. See, what's intriguing in this is that he ties this all in into one of the most difficult relationships of all, that one of the bondservant and the master. I can't think of any relationship that would be more contentious than that. Anybody here ever had a boss you didn't like? Okay, about 30, 40 people are being honest. The rest of you are lying, but that's okay. So you have these relationships, and when you're in a relationship like that, where you feel like you've been treated like a slave, where, you know, and that's especially repugnant to us as Americans. Here we are, 4th of July weekend. I mean, one of the things that we pride ourselves on is that no one is going to oppress us or control us, at least not, you know, publicly. Never mind what really goes on in our relationships. But we say things like that, and it just gets our back up quickly when someone talks like that. But in this instance, what he's talking about is the unjust, unsaved master and how he treats the servant. There couldn't be a more oppressive, familial relationship. And in that situation, he says, look, when your master is the unsaved, unjust, the kind of guy that everybody like talks bad about behind their back and everything else, he goes, if you think that you are being the servant of God by just simply, you know, when they look around and see you doing things, they find you busy, that's not it. I had a friend of mine in Mexico that he had mastered how to get along at work. He would grab the hand truck. We call him the Diablo in Mexico. He would grab the Diablo and he would walk around the plant with a hand truck. And see, he found out if you walk around with a clipboard, somebody might ask you to set it down and help them. But if you're walking around with a hand truck, nobody wants to ask you to help them because you might say, and can you help me put something heavy on this and carry it back? Nobody wanted to find out what you were up to. So he could walk around the plant and just kind of check everybody out and gossip with everybody, and nobody would ever ask a question because nobody wanted to find out why he had the hand truck. That is eye service. Everybody thought he was a great guy at work, but he was doing nothing. Nothing. That's eye service. But here's the thing. He says that you be the kind of servant, the bond servant in this house. You work for your boss, your economic provider, the one that is making it possible for you to live and everything. He says you do for them, regardless of what they're like, just, unjust, kind or unkind, you work for them as if you were working for God, that you know that he's the one that's watching you and you're looking for his approval, not the approval of the person who may be just or unjust, kind or unkind. He says, in you doing that, that is the statement, the declaration that you believe in the supremacy of Christ because you believe that he will make all things right in the end, that you leave him up to be the judge of the other person and that you do what you're supposed to do regardless of how they treat you. Can you imagine if all of our familial relationships, mom, dad, kids and parents, and if we lived and did in our lives as if the only person that we're really trying to please in the end is God, and so then we treated them as though they were made in the very image of God. See, because to show contempt for that other person is to show contempt for the image of God in them. As tarnished as it may be, as disturbed as it may be, as lost as it may seem, as many layers as it might be under, the image of God in them, and it's the sense of the statement, I believe in the supremacy of Christ. I trust Him to rule and reign over everything and to work all things out in the end. I believe that He is who He says He is. And so I'm going to treat that other person like that. Meaning that in every direction, husbands and wives, parents and children, slaves and masters, patron and client, that you not only claim to love that person or even claim to love God, but the evidence is that you show the kind of respect for the other person that makes them feel like they were created in the image of God. And all of our family, our household relationships. And you know, there's nothing more difficult than to think about that slave relationship that's there. I can't imagine anything more difficult or oppressive. I don't know about you, but when I read that text, I became completely undone. Because I know that's not how I always act. I know that that's not who I always am. See, it cuts right to the heart. Anyone who's ever had an unjust boss or someone in your life who's treated you with contempt as if you were their slave knows that what a big ask this is. Regardless of how difficult, regardless of how good or bad, that I would treat them as if they were made in the image of God. Now, if we're being honest right now, you're asking yourself, oh Lord, what about this relationship? What about this circumstance? Either that or you might be saying to yourself, you know, I've just really got to rethink this Bible inspiration thing. Maybe, you know, like, amen or oh me? You see, this is you up in your business Christianity. It's the belief that Jesus Christ really is supreme. And proving it in your household. In your household. See, sometimes it's a little easier to be nice to somebody out on the street that you barely know, and because you only have to do it for a few minutes, or even if they're difficult and that you go to that same grocery store and they're difficult all the time, you know ahead of time, this is going to be a difficult situation, this is a difficult person, and I'm going to be nice to them for the next 5 minutes or so as I check out my groceries, and I can deal with them because I know the parameters of it. I can walk away from it in the end. Those things are easier, but at home, when my guard is down, when I'm hungry, when I haven't had my Snickers bar, when, you know, whatever is going on in life, or maybe it's the situation, or maybe it's the way they said it, and all of a sudden it catches you off guard, and you think, uh-uh, not in this moment. But here's the good news. So if you're writhing in your chair, you know, like those dear Colossians were doing, you know, kind of feel uncomfortable. I have this great news for you. It's a concession that Paul gives us. And what is that concession? Pray. That's what he says. That's his concession. Pray. Paul, I can't pray. But Paul, you don't know. Pray. Pray. And then what Jason said earlier, and give thanks to God for all that He has done in your life. Give thanks to God for how that you have the people, the family, the situation even, the provision. Pray. Pray and give thanks to God. But Pastor, you don't know. Pray. Pray. The power of prayer. It doesn't mean that it gets easy. It doesn't mean that it isn't ever a struggle. It doesn't mean that you don't ever stumble or fail on that. Believe me, I do. But you stop the but. You know what I'm talking about? It's when you say, I believe that, but. And then you wipe out everything you just said with your new statement of what you really believe. And here's the deal. If you want to make Christ supreme, you got to let go of your big but. Pray and give thanks to God. That is how you tackle the situation. You say, well, that sounds simplistic. It's simple. I didn't say it was easy. I said it was simple. Simple and easy are not the same thing. You know, if you've ever watched, you know, a basketball player dunk the basketball at 7 foot tall, for him it was simple. It's simple. I just have to do the same thing. It's just not possible. I'm short. Some things are simple, but it doesn't mean that they're easy. And so when he goes on to call on them in the midst of this, he gives a very simple answer. And when you do not know how to do it, when you don't have the strength to do it, whenever you have all the excuses for why you can't do it or whatever else, pray and give thanks to God, because he's the one who will give you strength. He's the one who will empower you to live that way. Then he goes on and he calls them to pray. Pray for the saving of souls. Tells them to watch their speech. And certainly those are important things. He also tells them to be wise with outsiders. And all those things are very important. In fact, you know, I could probably spend as much time developing each one of those points this morning as we've spent up to now. But you know, here's the thing that I feel like God is saying to us this morning, right here and right now, is the love and the respect of those in your household. Those relationships, those familial relationships, maybe in the place of work, maybe it's in the house where you live, maybe it's in your larger family, but those relationships where you count on one another. And I think that the call of God in this very hour is for us to love and respect those in our household. See, there's a really distinct difference in the way people love one another. Lots of people say, I love you all the time, but you know in your heart whether or not they mean it by the way that they treat you, by whether or not there's respect in those words. It makes all the difference in the world. Some people don't ever say, I love you, but you feel that kind of relationship with them simply because of the way they treat you. They respect you. They honor you. They give you deference. They treat you as though you were created in the image of God. They never have to say, I love you, simply because you know that they love you. Other times people say it 1,000 times a day, but it means nothing if there's no respect. And how we treat one another, it not only says that I love you, but it also makes a statement about what we believe about the God we serve. So I have a different kind of altar call this morning. It's the altar of right where you are in your household. You see, in a moment, I'm going to ask you to stand up and stand together. And what I'd like you to do is get with the members of your household. It could be your extended household, could be your immediate household. Maybe it's some people that you work with that are, you know, you guys are have a dependent relationship that way on one another. And if you don't have anyone else here this morning, you say, oh, I'm here alone without my household or without my extended family or anything like that. My wife and kids, most of my kids don't live out of state. My wife is out of town visiting a couple of them. And so I just have my one daughter here this morning. You could just come up and join us. There she is. You could come up and join us. We'd love to pray with you. But here's what I want is I want no one to be left out. So I've asked the worship team not to come up because we're going to just play some music in the background. And we're going to do this nice thing. We're going to lower the lights because you may think to yourself, this is my chance to run away. But here's what I'm going to tell you is no one's going to check up on you. What I'm asking you to do is to gather by households and for you to pray for one another. Maybe you need to, just apologize to one another for not showing the kind of love and respect that you've meant to share. Maybe you started out that way, but, you know, the busyness of life and everything else, and pretty soon you just get to thinking that that person's always not going to do this, not going to do that, and you just kind of dismiss them emotionally, not meaning to, but you've just done it. Maybe, you know, I've heard people say it's a tradition in churches that you have a fight on the way to church in the morning. And not in this church, but and I've heard that in other churches that happens. And so maybe you had a big fight this morning and you just haven't said to one another, I'm sorry. I not only love you, but I do respect you. And I'm sorry I treated you that way. And then what I want you to do after you spend some time speaking to one another that way is then would you pray for one another? That you would just pray for the other person. Pray blessing over their life. Pray about the things that you believe about them. You know, one of the things is when I think of my wife, you know, she is just a wonderful math teacher. I am so grateful for the way that, you know, she does that. And I love what she does back here in kids ministry, too. But one of the things that I really believe is that she was called to be a math teacher. And so I like to speak that over her and to bless her and to recognize those gifts in her. I look at my kids and the things that they're good at. And some of them are good at math and some of them are good at other things, you know. And my oldest son's an engineer. And I'm convinced that he is fulfilling God's plan for his life. I bless that in him. Maybe you would take time to just speak those blessings over the other person. But what I want you to do is to show love and respect for one another in the name of the Lord. So if you're here and you don't have some family members and, you know, you're free to come up here, up in front of the stage here, and I'll be up here. And I'm not going to go out to the tent this morning. I just really want to make sure that everybody gets a chance to be ministered to. And if it's you and your family, or maybe it's just a husband and wife, and you're thinking, well, I don't have extended family. I got my wife here or whatever. You know, just would you pray over one another? Would you bless each other? It could be 2 minutes. You might just simply say, you know that, honey, I just want you to know I love you and I respect you. We haven't had any fights recently or anything like that. But I just want to speak that over you. And I want to pray over you this morning. Maybe it's a very serious moment and you're going to maybe minister to a little now, but maybe you're going to take it home and have some more prayer and discussion time. It's okay. See, that's why I turn the lights down, because it doesn't matter whether it takes you 30 seconds or 3 weeks. No one's here to judge you. So you come and go, the freedom of the Lord. No one's going to ask why you didn't stay or why you stayed as long as you did. But would you just, out of your confidence in the supremacy of Christ, speak love and blessing over one another? Would you show great respect for each other? Would you build up your household? And would you commit yourself to living in such a way that those who are closest to you know that they were created in the image of God because of the way that you value them, and that you would be able to say at the end of the day, I know who I am in the quiet of my life and in the public spaces of my life, and it is just who my children think I am, just who my wife says I am, just who my employees, my co-workers say that I am, is who I am all the time. Let me invite you. So let's stand together. And that music's just going to play, and just let me invite you to do whatever you need to do this morning. Otherwise, God bless you and have a great day.